Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Only 211 days until the Euros, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Who will start for England next summer and who could surprise us all? I'm Marcus Speller.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Now, everybody, with England's spot secure for the Euros next summer and only one more squad left for Gareth Southgate to pick in the March international break, Luke and I wanted to bring you a special episode all about the state of play for the England team right now.
Vindaloo, Vindaloo. Carry on.
Well, Luke, on today's show, we're going to have you performing some songs.
Here I am.
There we are. You've got
it's
the first
like
one.
Friday night's all right. Yeah, right.
We're going to each pick our 11, which we think England should start the tournament with next June, and an 11 which we think they'll play in the knockouts should they progress there and against the big
best side. 11, the best 11.
The best 11, we'll call it. And then we're going to answer your questions on some of the biggest challenges facing Southgate as well. We've had over 300 questions across our socials, so thank you so much for those. I really do appreciate that. So first of all, let's start with our 11s. We'll go back to front. Luke Moore, over to you. The formation, are you going back to 4-4-2?
Let's see how often Marcus can tell me I'm wrong in this next feature.
Well,
no, I'm not going 4-4-2. I'm going 4-2-3-1/4-3-3, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
However you want to look at it.
Let's call it a 4-5-1.
There's going to be roles. There will be roles to be performed of a different nature within the midfield,
right,
shall we say, and within the forward line. So if you want to call it a 4-2-3-1, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Just so you know, for the record, because we know how interested people are in this kind of thing, because as Marcus has said, we had so much correspondence about the show when we were about to record it. Opta list the formation that England played against Italy in the 3-1 win most recently as a 4-2-3-1. Now, I know that some people would call it a 4-3-3. That's the point of what I'm trying to get to. We haven't got to get bogged down in that.
No.
But anyway, so here we go. So I would say that we're going to have Pickford in goal. And that's a pretty easy one. You're looking at me like that because you know I've slagged him off in the past.
Well, I didn't like the way you worded that. We have to have him in goal.
Get used to the idea that I'm going to name some players here that I've slagged off in the past.
Look, this is
because
like,
I have to.
No. I will be smug about that. But it just, you know, you've picked someone who I agree with, by the way, but you've had a little dig as well.
Well, let me clarify it.
All right.
Okay. The reason we have to do it is because there are clearly issues with the current situation that Aaron Ramsdale finds himself in, who would be seen as the next best thing. Sam Johnston, who currently makes up the third choice keeper, probably isn't at the same level.
Is Nick Pope's kicking not up for you?
And we've all seen Nick Pope in the flesh kick the ball now, and so I'd like to change my opinion on that. So anyway, Pickford is the goalkeeper.
Right.
I don't imagine you'll be putting your money where your mouth is and saying anything different anyway when it comes to you. So that's the goalkeeper. Right back and left back, I've gone for the Neville brothers. No, I haven't. I've gone for my back four. Do you want to go from left back to right back or right back to left back?
I tend to go from left back to right back, but I know others do it the other way around. So it's up to you. You're
clear as mud. All right, first up,
start with your sweeper.
Yeah.
Left back, left back.
For left back to right back, I've gone Shaw.
Yep.
Maguire.
Oh. Suddenly the hunter has become the hunted.
Get fucked. Stones.
Okay.
And Walker.
Right.
Do you want me to justify those or do you want to do yours first?
I just, you know, Maguire's not, he's you know, he's been really bad, has he not, Luke? He's not starting for Manchester United up until recently.
Sure.
Why have you gone for Maguire?
Stones. No. Sure. Dunk. No. So basically, I could make an argument, I think, to say that Lewis Dunk could play ahead of Maguire.
Yeah, but you've not picked him though, have you?
I haven't, but I think Dunk has regularly played on the left side of the centre-backs. He's right-footed in doing so, the same way Maguire is. Maguire only came into the England setup, I think, from the middle to the end of 2017.
Fairly sort of late-ish.
Yeah, and then started in the 2018 World Cup, and it's kind of been there around there ever since.
So he has been a stalwart.
So what I'm saying is it's not too late for someone like Dunk. But for me, in summary, Pickford, Shaw, who's not fit at the moment, but we hope to be fit by then, is, I think, the best of those options. Maguire, Stones, Walker.
Interesting. And I agree with that. I've gone for the same as you. Okay. We've had a lot of questions about the left-back position, interestingly, including from Adam P. And that's perhaps because Chilwell and Shaw are the names we think, and they're both injured.
So the depth, if it's a question about depth, then the best way to think about it, I would say, is that you've probably got a hierarchy of Shaw, Chilwell and Trippier.
Yeah, I think so.
And that's how the problem solved. If you've got three options, and Trippier can do it. I mean, Trippier played left back against Italy and England won handily. I know Italy aren't, you know, perhaps in transition themselves, and maybe you'd be a bit more nervous about coming up against a France with him in that position. But ultimately, if you're down to your third choice left back, I mean, that's just life. That's one of those things.
And people might say, well, Italy's goal came from that side. Yeah, but I mean, Italy could have scored from the other side as well with Walker. When
they should have.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Okay, fine. So we're all agreed with the goalkeeper and back four. I think the midfield is quite an interesting little one. We've a few listeners, including Kraftwerk, wanted to
great
know...
Great name. It's spelt like Emil Kraft.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, so Kraftwerk thinks, wanted to know who should be the profile of the third man alongside Rice and Bellingham in that midfield to get the best out of them. I think a lot of people are thinking that. But Luke, are you one of those people?
I am kind of thinking about that. And I think just for the avoidance of doubt in my 4-2-3-1 type formation, for the purpose of this, I think I'll just treat it as a 4-3-3 very, very quickly.
Okay.
I'd have Rice there, and I'd have Bellingham further forward.
Yep.
You build a team around Bellingham, in my view. Mm-hmm. He plays further forward, kind of in the hole. And alongside Rice, I probably would still have Phillips.
Right.
But I can see the argument for having a Conor Gallagher in there, perhaps.
Gallagher's having a good season.
Having a good season. He's full of industry, full of athleticism. He can do a lot of pressing. He can do a lot of things, really. Mm-hmm. And if you limit him, I think, I know he has occasionally and more recently played further forward for Chelsea in that position I've put Bellingham in. He's not going to get in ahead of Bellingham, obviously. He can play further back. Mm-hmm. I think if you have more legs in there, particularly when you take into account that Phillips, unless he moves in January, isn't going to play an awful lot of football, I think Gallagher becomes an attractive option. Mm-hmm. I've been someone in the past who's kind of scratched my head a bit about what Gallagher offers.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure you were. Mm. I'm heading it off before you can. I feel like I get it now, and maybe I'm just a bit slow on the uptake. He's been important for Chelsea, and he's been good for them. You know, they've started to, at the time of recording, they've started to play much, much better, and they're capable of taking teams the distance, as we've seen with City and with Spurs. So, I think for me, for now, it's Phillips and Rice with Bellingham a bit further forward. But I wouldn't want to lose either Rice or Bellingham, obviously. I think Gallagher maybe offers you something a little bit different in that role. And maybe, if it's done well, can give you a bit more of a balance. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with you with that midfield three. There seems to be a thing of some people that I think everybody is all in on Rice and Bellingham. Actually, I don't think I've spoken to anybody who would say otherwise. Certainly not about Bellingham, but I think Rice is crucial. It is that other position. So a listener, Ali, suggested Conor Gallagher would be the perfect balance to that midfield. Will W said Conor Gallagher gives me Alan Ball vibes.
Yeah, I can see that.
As a player,
does all the hard work.
Put him in the midfield to do everything, do everyone else's running. There are also plenty of shouts for Sean Longstaff to be brought into the fold.
Well, we laughed out of town, didn't we?
You did.
Here we go again. Luckily, I've got strong shoulders, mate. Pete or Vish would better deal with this kind of treatment.
That's why you're in the chair.
Russell would ignore you.
But you have done a lot of heavy lifting on those shoulders because of all these things
you've
said.
I'm the fucking Alan Ball of this show. That's for sure. I think. We perhaps have been too dismissive of Newcastle players being involved. I don't hate the idea that you bring someone in to give them a feel for the setup. The same way we were talking yesterday about, you know, doing that for Rico Lewis or for perhaps one or two others. At this point, I think it's quite hard to make the argument for that at the moment, given the Newcastle start to the season, which has been good in places.
Yeah.
But they still sit, you know, below where they want to be.
I think you could just say that it's realistic. It's not going to happen.
I want to be accommodating and interested in people's points. That's all.
Well, you've changed, and we're appreciative of that
for now.
Yeah. Well, I think though with the midfield, I think that third man, as Kraftwerk put it, is actually
that's the talking point.
I think that it's been framed correctly there by Kraftwerk because it changes the dynamic of the midfield. Some people will think, well, come on, what about Trent Alexander-Arnold in that midfield position?
Or Stones.
No, Stones is going to be a centre-half.
The reason he's not going to be moved forward is because we need him at the back.
Exactly. So if you look at, say, Alexander-Arnold, we know what a wand of a right foot he's got. But if he comes in there, you are looking at Rice as the pivot and then Bellingham has to kind of slot back a little bit. You are shackling him a little bit.
Which you don't want.
And a lot of people have been saying, well, what about Maddison and Bellingham in there? And I think we're getting into sort of Sven territory there. On managerial
Sven. By which
Sven.
You mean bringing as many players as you can.
Yeah, specifically that part of Sven's character.
I think if we are going to talk about Maddison in this particular section, you know, as a midfield player, I think Maddison at the moment probably has to be satisfied with being the backup to Bellingham.
Which is pretty much what Southgate said.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine.
I didn't hear him say that. When did he say that?
He said that, you know, we've got a lot of players in that area. Yeah, it's a good backup. Look, Bellingham's currently injured. I know Maddison is as well. It's okay to have very, very good backups in certain positions, you know, rather than trying to play fantasy.
That's sometimes how it has to be.
Yeah, so I think that third man position is interesting. The only other person, which I'm going to quickly shout out with regard to that, is some people saying, why not Ward-Prowse? Because Ward-Prowse, if you look at his heat maps, and I know some people like to do all that and so on, it was interesting on Sky Sports they were looking at it. He actually, his heat map, where he plays positionally, is actually in that area that perhaps is more desired for the two behind Bellingham. He plays in that position more than Rice has done for Arsenal.
And he gives you a set-piece dynamic.
Yeah, so... And also, industry-wise, the distance he covers on the pitch is one of the best in the league.
So I know people won't necessarily care too much about what I think about Ward-Prowse for a number of different reasons. I've flip-flopped on him a bit. He's a Southampton player. I've perhaps been not as objective as I can be about him. I just don't think he's as good as Rice.
Okay.
And if he gets around the pitch more, fine.
No, but next to Rice.
Next to Rice is interesting, but I mean, it's probably a bit late for this stuff now. Mm-hmm. And I think that... It's hard, isn't it, to compare? Because
would you think Phillips is tried and tested? Southgate knows what he gets. Phillips started a Euros final. He's played big games for England. And Conor Gallagher offers something a little bit different and is playing at a high level at Chelsea.
Well, it's almost a bit like you get a wine list out. You know, you're going for a nice Sunday roast, you're having a nice bit of beef. You know, you look at the red wine. Mm. You know, there's a lot of red wine that goes with beef. Which one do you prefer?
Jordan Henderson.
Not, but Henderson's a fucking apple tizer.
So would you have Ward-Prowse instead of Henderson in the squad?
I would actually, yeah.
But do you think Henderson's in there because of that, you know, status as being the elder?
We don't know what he brings behind the scenes.
Okay, but in pure football.
And I've spoken to people who have been around the England squad recently, actually, in terms of the media side, and they have said to me, in fact, one of them said to me, little word of warning, because I've heard your stuff on Henderson, just remember, off the pitch, behind the scenes, he does actually bring a lot to that setup.
Indeed, and I think
that's a factor.
Yeah.
But the red wine, the pained red wine analogy is just that my point is that there's a few different red wines that go with beef.
Right.
But it depends which one you prefer.
You used to use a fish and chips analogy for this. I've changed.
I've sold out.
You really have.
So I think, look, are you going to be honest with yourself here? I'll throw the question back at you.
Yep.
If England start, as you said at the start of the show, a big knockout game against a good team, and he chooses to pick Ward-Prowse in the base of midfield, are you happy with that?
Yeah, no, I think that's it.
The answer's no, isn't it?
The answer's no, but in the squad...
Squad is fine. I've said I'll put him in there at Henderson.
There you go. Okay, so you've answered that one then. Let's go on to the front three. So
the front three in a way is
so we've
tricky.
Agreed everything so far. So in goal, Pickford, left back Luke Shaw, centre halves Maguire and Stones, right back Carl Walker. In the midfield, we've got a base of Rice and Phillips and Bellingham in front. So you and I are agreed with eight out of eight so far. Front three.
I'm not having Kane.
Right?
No.
So we're agreed on that.
So no, in many ways, though, I think this is the most interesting discussion.
So who's flanking Kane? And I did say flanking.
Kane's in there. So there's nine that we agree
He's
on.
He's in on merit.
He's in on merit. I'd say so. He's just about convinced me. although I won't forget that second penalty against
Shut
France.
Up.
So the wide positions are really interesting. And the reason I think that, and I've thought this for a while, is because I do think this is probably the area where, although you have to bear in mind the relationship with the fullbacks behind them, that's a part of it. But England have got a luxury where they can afford to pick the players they want in those positions, depending on how Southgate and Holland see the challenge to be met.
Yes.
So, for example, here's an example. When Pedro Porro played right back for Spain against Scotland at Hampden, the Scotland won 2-0, right? He had a beast. He had a nightmare. Yeah. And the reason he had a nightmare is he put on a huge amount of pressure by Andy Robertson, which caused the first goal. And then he got rinsed again in the second half by Kieran Tenney because he's got amazing legs and Porro just couldn't deal with it, right? If England play against Spain, would England look at that and say, if Pedro Porro is going to play right back for Spain, here's what he doesn't like.
Yeah.
So we're picking this guy. If that's the case, then it's really just pick who you think is best. It's your judgment.
Yeah.
But because of the purpose of this show, I have to pick people. I think if we're assuming everyone's back on form and they get over the particular issues, the injuries and the perhaps slight issues with form they may have, I think I'd probably pick Saka and Rashford.
Really?
I think I would, yeah, I think I would. I also think he'll pick Saka for sure.
Well, Saka has started on the right in all five of the opening qualifiers that England played. It was Foden, Kane, Rashford for the game against Scotland and the last game against Italy, which Saka was, of course, injured for. But I think Saka is, you know, has won back-to-back England Player of the Year awards.
It's hard to say you leave him out.
Saka's been scintillating in an England shirt, let's be honest. I would agree totally with Saka. Obviously, Kane's in there. The other one is, that's the one I'm not sure about Rashford. I think what Southgate has tended to do, if my memory serves me correctly, is use Rashford as an impact sub or start him in the games England are expected to win. So against Scotland, I know Saka was injured and he shuffled it a little bit. You're playing against a team who you think Rashford should just go at. Wales in the World Cup would be a better example.
You just back yourself to be better.
Exactly.
That, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's it.
Well, but the thinking, though, sorry to cut in, but the thinking here with Rashford is that I'll throw that back at you then because he picked Foden against France.
Yeah.
And he didn't really do much.
Yeah.
Foden wasn't a great game, but Foden didn't have a great game.
No. But Foden had, was it Senegal he scored or was it against Wales he scored? Forgive me, my memory shouldn't.
We're talking about the big games
we are.
Perhaps arrogantly, we're expecting us to get through a group.
Well, no, but England are among the favourites for the tournament, so you do expect
them. They are joint favourites with France.
Yes, yeah, so you do expect them to go through. It's not an arrogant thing at all. I mean, it's where the smart money would be. Mm. You know, again, if people are going to say, well, you know, France might get a tricky group. France should be in the latter stages of this tournament. Mm. So I still would feel Foden ahead of Rashford, I think. That would be the only difference. But it's not a particularly strong feeling. And I think that's the beauty of these positions. Whoever Southgate goes with, to be honest with you, I know he's not been in the past five squads, but it wouldn't shock me if like Raheem Sterling started. Now, people might go, hang on a minute, as you've just said, he's not been in the last five squads. He's been a crucial player to England. The only thing is, the way England played in the Euros was trying to get a lot of the strengths out of Sterling. You know, that kind of the cheat code was almost get down the line, cut back, and then Sterling was there to tap in. The goal against Germany was a good example of that. With Bellingham in the side, you know, then you've got to start thinking, actually, who complements Kane and Bellingham better? So I think Sterling, I still would have him in the squad. I would probably drop Bowen for him. And I know West Ham fans will be angry about that, and Bowen's been brilliant. But this is the quality you have in these areas. That's what I would probably do. But starting, I would go for Foden.
So the reality is you've got Foden, Rashford, Grealish, Maddison can play off the left. That's not his best position.
Well, that's probably not where Southgate sees him, maybe.
I don't think he does, but my point is there's a lot of options.
There is a lot of options. I haven't even mentioned. Sterling's not even getting in the squad.
Sterling. So it's
Cole Palmer's just come into the squad.
Let me illustrate the example a bit more so you can have your own say on it.
Mm.
If England get drawn against Belgium in the Euros, the Belgium will probably qualify, right? I think they have qualified. Mm. They've done really well. They haven't lost a game.
Probably just a big side who...
Yeah, big team.
You know.
They played Timothy Castagne at right back.
Yeah.
Plays for Fulham.
Fine player.
But you would know, the reason I'm using it as an example is because he plays for the team that you support. Mm-hmm. So you would have a good understanding of which left wide forward mm-hmm. is going to have the most joy against him.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And that's how you pick your left forward.
Well, and I think, yeah, you're right. I think Saka's such a special player and such a talent. I think whoever you've got there, I think you put him in. And I think that really is...
But he's off the right.
Off the right, yeah. But he's such a talented player and whatnot and has done so much in an England shirt. Is that's how good he is and that's what he's done. He's got that position nailed down. It is that left-sided forward position. People have talked about the midfield, but we think if you want to get the best out of Bellingham, you go with Rice and Phillips.
Definitely. It's a great balance.
So that left forward position is the one that I think is up for grabs. Currently, I think Foden against the top quality opponents. You're thinking maybe Rashford. So
I think the main thing to take is that if you set it up right, it doesn't matter who you play against. If he's on form, Bellingham will kill you dead. He will. He'll kill any team dead. Yeah. If he can play with freedom in the form that he's been in and mm-hmm. he's fully fit, he will be the best player at the Euros.
Okay, so in summary, your 11, Luke.
Pickford, Shaw, Maguire, Stones, Walker, Phillips, Rice, Bellingham slightly further ahead of him, Saka on the right, Rashford on the left, and Kane up front.
So that is my 11, but I'm subbing in Foden for Rashford.
Yeah.
There we are. All right, we're going to have a quick break, and then we're going to tackle your questions. See you in a moment.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Hello, I am Sven Goran Eriksson, and you are listening to the Football Ramble.
My goodness, suddenly we've got no clothes on.
I knew he'd get in there somehow.
Oh dear, right, it's time to tackle your questions, everybody. Luke, what have we got first?
Yeah, first up is a question. But by the way, look, we did get so many of these. Yeah. And I know it's a really kind of self-aggrandizing thing to say, but we've picked the best, the most interesting ones that have talking points. So thank you if you did send one in and it's not been read out. We will do more of these shows between now and the Euros, obviously. So hopefully we'll get to them when they become a bit more germane. But Sam Fenton Rowe asks, do you think that Southgate's stubbornness and arrogance in regards to selection around Maguire, Henderson, Phillips, Sterling, etc., will ultimately be a barrier to England having success at the Euros next year? And I'll bundle that up with quite a lot of people, because I think it's kind of a variation on the same question. A lot of people asked if Southgate has enough tactical adaptability to win a tournament. So I guess it's the sticking with favourites, the perceived stubbornness and the tactical versatility. Does all of that get in the way of England doing well next summer?
Or winning a tournament? I mean, you know, there were a few kicks away from winning a tournament. So I would say no. I mean, yeah. It's funny. So the players that Sam has mentioned there,
Sterling. That's unfortunate.
So I get his point.
He's getting hammered for not picking Sterling last week.
Yeah. So I'm not going to drill down on that and be nitpicky because I understand Sam's questioning. I mean, it's picking Maguire, that was a big talking point. And actually, I thought it was Maguire that has helped. Southgate, who's certainly in the media, has helped change the rhetoric a little bit around Maguire when he just went, it's an absolute joke. The treatment he's been getting, and then suddenly people start saying, "Oh yeah, it has been a bit over the top," and perhaps people are thinking that now. I think the reason why he stuck with him is with Maguire, he's been such a stalwart and such an important player, and it's at international level you get very, very little opportunity. I think if Maguire hadn't been starting games and he'd been in the same situation had he had been at the start of the tournament, I think once you got to that group in March, it's very, very difficult. But he also knows that what he can bring, and Stones has been playing next to him, and defence has been very strong for England in tournaments. It's a very, very difficult thing. Phillips, again, when he came in against Scotland, he looked good and he didn't look like he lacked minutes.
And who else do you... we talked about perhaps Gallagher playing ahead of him,
yeah,
if he carries on the way he's going, but I don't think there's a solid argument against him being in the squad.
No, exactly. Henderson's the one,
yeah,
that you would say, and I understand that, but you mentioned it in the first half, the importance he brings and so on. So, I mean, we should say that Sam didn't say stubbornness or arrogance. He said stubbornness / arrogance. You know, pick whichever you think is it. I don't think it's arrogance.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it isn't arrogance, but I think, do you know what I think it might be, Sam? Mm. Is that I think it might be that there's a bit more of a prickliness about Southgate now. And I think that's partly because he's been in the job for a bit longer, yeah, and he's probably a little bit browbeaten.
Yeah.
It's very easy to forget that when he came in and started doing well, you're never going to get that kind of feeling around him and the team that you had in 2018, because it was new and it was fresh and it was a new start and everyone bought into it.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean England won't do better. It may even win next summer. They may do. The feeling leading up to it won't be the same.
Yeah.
So I think people will be there. So there'll be an element of people where they'll be going, because of these perceived ideas that I've got about Southgate, because I've had a longer time watching him, I don't know if we're going to win the next game, and then the next game, and then the next game.
Yeah.
So I think really, I think Southgate's become more prickly and a bit more standoffish in contrast to the way he started his tenure, where he got everyone around and invited all the journalists in and did an open thing. And I also think that England fans, if they're being honest with themselves, have also just got a little bit bored and have had a lot more time to focus on the negatives. Mm-hmm. Of which there haven't been that many overall, have there?
No, I don't think there has at all.
I think he got the Henderson thing wrong, as I said at the time, and I still think that now.
Okay, well, with the Maguire thing, I think also there was not a standout candidate as well.
Yeah.
I think there was a few names.
There was no one knocking on the door, making the thing. Like when Grealish was going mental and everyone was like, he's got to be in the team.
Yeah.
There's none of that there.
No. With regards to the point about Southgate's tactical adaptability, I think that in-game tactical adaptability is different. A different thing, and I think that there's maybe an argument there. He's been a bit slow traditionally with substitutes and trying to change the game. We saw that in the Euros final against Italy, which seems a long time ago now, and there has been a World Cup since then, but that was a good example of, right, you have to try and change something, but at the same time as well, he's, you know, it's also on the players, that kind of stuff. I think that he is a bit more tactical. It can adapt tactically a bit more. Him and Holland, of course, it's not just Southgate. You look at 2018, just to go through it very quickly, 3-5-2. It was 3-5-2 because it wasn't a side that was really firing on that many cylinders. Da, 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 da. Right, let's go for this. Let's try and reduce the errors, blah, blah, blah. After that, right, let's be a bit more expansive. Nations League is more of a 4-3-3. Come to the Euros, he starts tinkering with a 3-4-3. And in that tournament, against Germany, and in the final, he starts with a 3-4-3, moves to a 4-3-3 within the final. It didn't really change the dynamic of the game much. Come the World Cup, it's 4-3-3 because he's thinking, right, we can now play a bit more expansive. We've got to think about our attacking talent rather than just go, we're a bit creaky at the back. So he has flexed, you know, been a bit flexible there. But in-game, I do get that point, though.
I would also add that ask yourself if you think that England haven't won anything because they've been tactically short.
Yeah.
And I would say, World Cup 2018, it was all very new. They were knackered. Mm-hmm. And they looked like it was perhaps had a little bit of a lack of flexibility and a lack of trust in some of the more peripheral players to come in and do a job for them. I don't think it was necessarily a tactical point.
And also a midfield of Henderson, Lingard and Dele Alli, you know, all good players back then and so on. But you're playing against Modric, Rakitic, you know, that was a golden generation for Croatia, a golden side.
Against Italy, they in the final of Euro 2020, they lost the momentum, but they were very close. Mm. I mean, you're talking about a penalty shootout.
They didn't beat them.
And against France, they come up against the best team in the world and they narrowly lost. Mm. So let's do the next question because we've got a few to get through, haven't we?
This is from Cheesy Moments. Do you think causes Southgate's sometimes excessive loyalty to certain players? Is it the pressure to get good results so he can feel he can't change? Is it inflexible tactics or something
else? Not again.
Yeah, well, I find it strange that he keeps resisting change even when it's obviously a problem.
So,
and not too dissimilar to the previous question.
Yeah, it's kind of more, we bracket them together for a reason. Look, I think on this show, The Ramble particularly, we have a mandate to entertain people. We have to try and be an entertaining show rather than the kind of deep dive into the minutiae of football and tactics and all the rest of it. So we do perhaps go a little bit over the top when we criticise people for piss-taking purposes.
Yep.
Harry Maguire would be one of those, mm-hmm. you know, and we've had our say on Henderson. To me, I don't know if I'd call the loyalty excessive. I think from the outside looking in, I do criticise it and I do challenge it and I do undermine it with humour, I suppose, because it's an entertainment show. But if I'm being totally honest, you know, Southgate and any international manager doesn't get an awful lot of time with players. Mm-hmm. And he will probably really value the time he's built up with certain players because he knows what they can do for them, he knows what kind of character they are, and he knows the environment that he wants to foster.
Which has been very important for
this England
side.
And that's really important. And when we say things like he keeps resisting change even when it's obviously a problem, is it obviously a problem? Mm. What is the problem? Mm-hmm. Is the problem we're disappointed that England narrowly lost to France in the World Cup?
The problem to me is that they haven't lifted a trophy.
Yeah, and that, but
the problem before that again, you just got to glance back before Southgate took over. That doesn't mean to say Southgate hasn't made mistakes. Doesn't mean to say that it's all wonderful and whatnot. England fans are so desperate for that trophy win. But the one of the great plus points and one of the massive wins for Southgate and co. is the fact the players love meeting up with the England side. Mm. You hear what previous players have said.
Do you think they still do?
Yes. Absolutely right. You know, like, you know, when Ezri Konsa talks about getting the call up, he was like, oh my God, I thought it was a joke and all this. I'm so proud. My family is so proud. There's all these kind of things. Back in the day, you talk about some of the titans of English football in recent years. People like Jamie Carragher, Paul Scholes, you know, thinking, oh, blimey, I'm glad that's over now.
It wasn't for Liverpool.
Well, that was Carragher's comment. Yeah. You know, some players saying, oh yeah, I just wanted not to be the fall guy and all this kind of stuff. Such a change. And therefore, personality of players and what they bring to the actual camp is crucial to that and what they're trying to build. And that's what Southgate says, you know, with this group of players, this is what we've been doing. If you start changing up too much...
We're looking for problems that aren't really there.
Maybe we are.
I think maybe that's the case. And so perhaps we're just a little bit spoiled and a little bit getting a little bit bored of the fact that there's nothing new and exciting about Southgate because he's not that kind of guy.
But this is the thing for Southgate is the only thing left now to really kind of impress people, if you know what I mean. Even if they go all the way to the final playing great football and they're just narrowly picked, they've got to win it.
Yeah, I think that's right. JK, you're next up. And JK has asked, which player do you think has the capacity to be the surprise candidate in the Euros a la Bellingham in Euro 2020? I mean, presumably we mean World Cup 2022 when Bellingham was really the surprise package, right?
Yeah.
People kind of knew what he could do, I suppose, but that was when he really had his breakthrough, right?
Yeah, that's when he played. Because, we're not talking about a player who's going to be called up like Walcott and just not feature at all.
No. And I think to answer that question concisely, it's realistically going to need to be an attacking player because that's how the things are. I mean, if someone comes and slots in place centre back for in replace of an injured Stones or whatever, you might get some headlines and do really well, but ultimately it's unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, Levi Cole will maybe come in at left back or something, but I think Trippier.
Even that just bored me then.
Yeah, poor old Levi.
No, I think he's great, but you know what I mean? That's not really how it's going to work. That's not how the media industry works. I think there's an outside chance it could be someone like Cole Palmer.
Cole Palmer,
if he gets in there late on, he's in there at the moment and he sticks around and then he's relied upon, someone throws him on.
And this is maybe not...
Southgate.
Yeah, sure.
No one else can just choose him. And he scores or something and he sticks in the team or whatever.
And you're not relying too much to answer this question on injury, say. Because if, say, Kane got injured, you could say maybe after his ban, Ivan Toney comes back. He's only got one cap. And suddenly comes in and is starting and does really well. You know, that would be one story. But that's relying on something quite big. Whereas Cole Palmer, you could get in the squad, could be thrown on for the last 10 minutes, suddenly does really well. And go, actually, I think maybe we'll start him with regards to that.
Oh, do you know what could happen? Is that people could just love the fact that, say, in the quarter final, he scores his penalty in the shootout and looks amazing at it. Everyone goes, Cole Palmer's great.
I think Cole Palmer's a good shout. Eberechi Eze.
I don't think he'll make it.
Do you not think he'll make the squad?
No.
Okay, well, that shoots me down.
No, but no, it's your opinion.
I think you've got to be creative with the answer.
Yeah.
And if I am picking my, you know, squad, there's maybe not that many surprises in there. And, you know, to try and say Tony or someone like Watkins, they're not going to play if all's well. Whereas a Cole Palmer, I think, is maybe a good shout. So you're saying Palmer. I'll say Eze.
Okay.
Vish isn't here, and I know he will love that, the fact that I've said that.
I love Eze. I just don't think he'll get picked.
Yeah, okay. Got a question here from Tam Askin, who says, if one player was to get injured, who would be the most disastrous for England? He's put Kane, Jude,
I think you've answered your own question. I think the only two players where it's an absolute disaster.
Mm-hmm. We pick one.
I would say Jude Bellingham. If I was forced to pick just one, I'd say Jude Bellingham. But I also acknowledge what Harry Kane means as a symbol for that squad.
I think
everyone looks up to
him. I think Kane is the answer to that question. Fine. Because Jude Bellingham goes out the side. That is a shame. But the way he was played at the World Cup, you could have someone fit in on that system with Rice as the pivot.
Yeah, but I think Jude Bellingham is the best player in the world.
That's part of it. That's fine. But you've also got what they've done for the England side and whatnot. And he's been more recent. Also, James Maddison is the replacement. Maddison isn't as good as Bellingham currently, but Maddison, I think, is a player that gets people excited. And people think, oh, actually, that's not a bad replacement, because there's a lot of people who are trying to get
him. So the drop-off is not as big as
exactly,
what you're saying.
Whereas with Kane, it's suddenly like, woof, okay, is Tony going to come back and hit the ground running? Is it going to be Ollie Watkins? It's a huge drop-off.
Yeah,
even though that's not a slight on those two, it's just how good Kane is. I think John Stones would be another one, but I think you're getting a bit further down the pecking order, so yeah.
Yeah, Stones would probably be third, I'd say. Mm. Okay, and then Bailey. Hello to you, Bailey. Bailey said, who is England's nightmare opponent at the Euros as we sit here today?
France, because they're the best side in the competition for me. But also, I would still say Spain, because I still think England struggle against a side who can keep the ball. I was at the game against Italy, didn't need to be at it as long as you watched it somewhere. And you can just see that there were moments when the Italians, not a good Italy side, I thought England were good value for the victory. But Italy, they went ahead and they could have got a second goal. And it's that intricate passing, knocking it around, that England will still need another generation or two or whatever to produce that type of football. When opposition players can keep the ball and they can knock it about very, very nicely, we've seen sides who on paper were poorer than England in the past beat England or cause England problems because of that. England won in Naples against Italy, to use another Italian example in the context of England. You saw that second half. England were then entrenched in their own box. Okay, they got a sending off and they just couldn't get the ball off Italy. They won the game, of course.
Look, I take all those points. I think the answer is France.
Yeah,
I think
that's the obvious answer.
I think England will beat any other team. And if we're going to talk about Spain specifically, I didn't know you were going to say Spain, but if we're talking about Spain specifically, how do teams beat Spain? Well, based on what I've seen in the last calendar year, so we take into account the World Cup, they've been beaten by teams who are really intense, who really go after them, who really put them under pressure. Japan did it in the World Cup. Morocco did it in the World Cup. Mm-hmm. Fair enough, they won on penalties, but they got past them, and Scotland did it at Hampden. They just put them under huge amounts of pressure, create an intense atmosphere, and really make it tough. It's no coincidence that Scotland at Hampden, Japan and Morocco.
Japan.
Morocco got to the semi-final by being really fucking intense and really pushing it and going, you can be as technically good as you want, but this game ain't just about that.
Yep.
And you're about to find that out. Mm. If England can channel that, and I think England actually are capable of doing that, they'll beat Spain, I believe. I don't know if they'll beat France. You put any other European team in front of me, as I sit here now, I can easily convince myself England will beat them. I can't do it with France. That doesn't mean they won't beat them.
I know what you mean.
Even with the France thing, there's an element of kind of redemption about it, which possibly could be channeled. And that England have got the ability. I mean, France won't want to play England.
No
way. Because they'll think we had life and death against them last time and we got through. They're going to be really motivated. And England and France are joint favourites across all the betting companies in the country. So, you know, traditionally going into a tournament, betting companies do tend to kind of think England are better than they are. But I don't think that's the case at the moment. So the short answer is France. I think that's that. I think that's the only one we really need to worry
about.
We
need Switzerland to do us a solid.
Yeah, exactly. But that doesn't mean, by the way, and I think if you're listening to this because you like listening to Marcus and I and you're not an England fan.
God bless you.
Yeah. That doesn't mean, don't get it twisted. I'm not saying England can't lose to anyone because they can. If they have a shitty day, they'll go out.
Yeah, but this is, look, I understand the English media have continued to, you know, embarrass themselves and whatnot, sections of it, shouldn't say all, and people can say, oh, well, the thing is, the English are very arrogant and so on. Well, no, as you say, they are the favourites. You know, it was a bit like when England played Scotland at the Euros last time, and some of the pundits were saying, well, England are going to be favourites, and you had some of the Scottish pundits say after the game, oh, you all thought you were going to batter us. Like, well, you were calling yourselves the underdog before. You can't have it both ways. You know, so I think you're right to say that. But let's end with this question from Ben Mayhook, who says, does our tournament end, England's tournament, of course, does our tournament end with a Jude Bellingham red card or a Jude Bellingham missed penalty?
Well, look, he's more likely to get
there
a red card.
There we are, crashing back down to earth.
He's more likely to get a red card on the Easter miss a penalty, chiefly because Harry Kane will take the penalties. And Bellingham was right in the thick of it in midfield.
Shootout.
Oh, yeah, true, actually, yeah. Mm-hmm. I suppose, yeah. I believe in Jude. I trust him. I totally understand what Ben's saying. I totally understand that there could be someone who, you know, quote-unquote, lets us down, but ultimately it's a team game, so we shouldn't look at it like that. I don't think it'll be Bellingham.
No.
But listen, I look forward to Pete clipping this up after the quarterfinal defeat.
Well, let's hope he never uses it.
No, that's absolutely. Look, we should do more of these. This has been fun, and there'll be more information to come out as the draw gets made and as England play again. So we should definitely do more of these and see how the things change in the months coming up and leading up to the tournament.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for listening to us at the Football Ramble here, part of the Acast Creator Network. We're back tomorrow, of course, with the preview show. Do follow us on X, TikTok, Instagram and YouTube at Football Ramble. And don't forget, subscribe on your podcast app. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, England. See you soon.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
The Championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real Championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.